PC Hill is not a doctor and does not claim to be a doctor licensed in any type of medical field. Don't be an idiot and use anything heard on the show as medical advice. This information should be used for educational purposes only, and you should contact your doctor for any medical advice. Now get off me. Welcome to Kick It Naturally. I'm Kenna McEnroe, and I'm here with T.C. Hale, author, natural health expert, producer.
I'm T.C. Hale. I'm here with Kenna McEnroe, girl, person, sitting over there.
That's me. Huh. And to my left, we have Will Hottie Patati Schmidt with us today, fitness trainer to the stars extraordinaire.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, hello.
Hello.
I'll say hello.
Thanks, Tony.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for coming out.
We're loud today.
Yeah.
We do. We have a lot to do today. We're going to cover multiple topics because we're not scared.
Okay.
And then we're also making more videos, wrapping up the coach course, putting on the final touches. And I noticed yesterday that it's awesome.
Awesome.
Cool.
I just noticed it.
That's good.
As I was looking over it,
I was like,
I'm so upset. I'm like jealous. I wish I could take this course. It's that awesome.
You could probably take it again if you want.
I feel like I would know all the answers to the quizzes
That's the best time to take it. Then you feel like, hey, I'm smart.
Okay.
You could set up like a participant scoreboard and you could be like way ahead.
I would be the winner chicken dinner.
Exactly. You could win on the contest. But if any of you guys would like to learn how to become a health coach and take this cool course.
Segway.
Yeah. Or even just dig into more advanced teachings for yourself or your family. Go to healthprocourse.com to learn about Tony and Will's course for coaches. Registration for this course only opens to the public for about a week at a time. So be sure to register for the coach newsletter so you'll be notified when the next registration opens. You'll find more info at healthprocourse.com.
Yeah, we're getting pretty excited about that. But for today, we're going to cover two topics. We're going to put them together and pretend like they're one, even though they're totally different.
So they don't have anything to do with the other.
Meh.
It's chronic cough and bad breath. You might have bad breath if you're coughing all the time and air is getting in there.
Curling up your guts.
Your throat's dry, maybe. I don't know.
Okay, that's it then.
Can I
handle them and we're done with those topics.
That's what I'm here for, people. So if you haven't joined us on Facebook, what is your problem? I am just one commercial after another. Go ahead and go to Kick It in the Nuts and like us there. And that's where we post all of our show topics. And you guys can ask any questions. We'll try to cover those questions in the show. Or you can even tell us to do a certain specific topic that you want to know about. I mean, we've probably already done it. Because we've done like a million of these.
Or 78.
Yes.
It's either one of those numbers.
Very close.
A million or 78. But that's good. Well, let's just, if nobody else has anything else to share, let's go right into bad breath.
All right.
All right.
So let's talk about bad breath. And, you know, there's a lot of different causes for bad breath. And we'll kind of touch on a few of them. But the one really big one that a lot of people don't know about that we'll kind of breeze over before we get into questions. One major cause for bad breath that a lot of people don't understand is that here's the test that you do, is that you take what you eat for dinner. Let's say that you eat a steak and some vegetables and you put that out in a garbage can outside your house and just let it sit there for a while. Maybe, you know, 8 or 9 days, and you go back up and open up the garbage can and stick your head in that garbage can, and some bad stuff is going to happen. So what happens is there was no digestion to break that food down, so it just kind of rotted in the garbage can, and all this disgusting things happen. So when people don't have the ability to break down their food, the food just kind of rots there in the stomach and in their intestinal tract, and it creates all these gases and fermentation and chemical reactions, and really it's just a pile of gross. So as that pile of gross is going on, that's what it's known as in the science world.
Pile of gross.
While that pile of gross is going on, it kind of comes back up, and then it comes out your gullet when you say words.
Mm.
And then people back up like 3 feet when you're talking.
Mm.
So in a lot of situations, not every situation, but a lot of situations, chronic bad breath is a result of your food rotting and fermenting, and then that stench coming back up out of your mouth.
Mm.
What if you have chronic bad butt?
No. You mean gas?
No, I was just being.
But BO could be an interesting thing to weave into this topic too. As well.
Let's do that now.
That's true.
Yeah, now BO, that we
we're
have.
Adding it, and people didn't have time to right. add their
It'll
questions.
Be a surprise bonus topic for the week.
We improvise because we hang out with Kenna, and she teaches us
how to do that. Are you trying to tell me something, Will?
Well.
So yeah, let's talk about that some.
Yeah. Well, do we want to go further into the whole bacteria and what to do about it with the stomach thing, or should we come wrap back around to that?
We'll come back to that.
Okay. Well, one really fun way to start off the topic about BO is, did you guys ever see a documentary called The Science of Attraction?
Yes.
You did? It's really good.
Yeah.
So they've done an experiment that's, I think, been repeated multiple times where they have a bunch of guys smell girls use gym shirts. And then girls smell guys' gym shirts, and they have to rate them on how sexy they think the smell is of each shirt. And they found guys consistently liked the smell of the girls that were ovulating. Like they would just pick out. There's like two girls that were ovulating, and they would just instinctively like that. So it didn't really matter about their genetics; it just mattered about that their period in the cycle. But girls liked guys who had. Apparently, like, the healthiest immune systems, which they could tell by the scent, because the scent of your body odor is created by the ferment of the bacteria that lives on your skin. So if you don't have a strong immune system, you can have these sort of, like, undesirable bacteria that thrive on your skin and create skin problems and issues, as well as have a putrid smell to them. Like, the kind of fermentation occurring is, like, smells rancid.
Scary.
But the healthier the individual's immune system, the healthier the flora that lives on the skin, and the nicer like ferment smell that's created. So you can look at like when we look at BO, we can look at issues of like the individual's immune system and the health of like the skin cells and their ability to properly metabolize steroids and properly. Eliminate waste out through the bile rather than out through the skin. So there's a lot of information we can gain about someone's BO and their digestion and their overall immune system.
Right.
I'm ovulating, Will.
Okay.
It's so interesting about the ovulating thing, too, because, you know, as young guys today, a lot of them would run and flee of the thought of getting a girl pregnant and, you know, having offspring. But when it comes back down to our animal instincts, that's really all we're here for, is just to make more of us. So it's just so interesting that they've proven through some type of experiment that we are attracted to that.
And what's that called again? I want to watch this.
It's The Science of Attraction. It's on Netflix.
Anyways, so let's go back to the bad breath thing. So we can see the BO, that does have to do with our physiology as well. And as well, you know, in the same way that if you eat a whole bunch of garlic, that can start to seep out of your body and you can have that odor. Other foods that may not be digesting well and are rotting and fermenting could create those gases, and the body tries to remove that through the skin too.
Yeah, I mean, certain foods, that's just going to happen, like asparagus in your urine. That doesn't mean that something is off in your digestion. That's just how certain foods impact us. But if someone has like a continual rancid smell in their breath or their BO, it's a definite issue. And we can look at like what's going on with their digestion.
Right, it's not a personality thing.
Yeah. So so anyway, you want me to go into a little bit about the stomach physiology, or should we go into questions?
Let's handle a question real quick, okay. And then we'll go into that.
You would ask me. I don't even have it ready because I thought we were far away from questions.
No.
But here we are. Kim, I'm always conscious of my breath. Is there any other way to keep it fresh without brushing my teeth a zillion times a day or chewing gum? Also, why do some people have horrible morning breath and others not so much?
Okay, so that'll probably be the theme of what we kind of talk about when it comes to breath. So let's look into the physiology of the stomach first, so we can cover the people that have constant stank head. And then we'll move backwards a little bit and kind of move into some issues that can happen in the mouth as well.
Okay. So the stomach resting pH should be down around 1 or 2, which is really, really acidic. And it's not only to break down proteins and help you digest the food, but it's also to sterilize the food. And I don't know if you've ever put your hand into like a jar of a pH of 1 or 2.
I have not done that. I've chosen not to do that on purpose.
Right, but if you did, it would burn your skin off. And that is what should be happening.
Like, it might not melt like you see on Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Right.
But you would damage.
It would burn. Yeah, so it's just sizzle and burn and break down, So the cells inside the stomach are designed to withstand that pH without damage. And if the lining of the stomach is intact, it's not a problem. And it's useful to have that pH down that low because it kills off the bacteria that comes into our body through the food that we eat, whether eating animal flesh foods or plants or whatever, even in the water. It sterilizes our food through that super low pH. And anything that survives that acid bath then gets doused with a highly alkaline substance when it leaves the stomach and goes into the duodenum. So our digestive system is really set up to very effectively chemically sterilize
and fry anything.
So when we take, if we don't have enough hydrochloric acid, or if we take antacids that neutralize our stomach acid because we're dealing with like reflux issues or whatever, then we no longer digest our food or sterilize it. And then bacteria can survive in the stomach and they will create more of themselves and a lot of waste products from their own metabolic processes, and that creates a fermenting, rotting smell that you'll then breathe out, and people smell that when you exhale.
Right, and so you're not only looking at all the stank that could come from the food that you ate that did not get broken down and it's rotting and all the chemical reactions that happen through that process, but if bacteria are able to live in your stomach or even in your small intestines, really, they have waste product. You know, there's waste that comes out of bacteria, just like there's waste that comes out of us. So that can create an odor as well that can come back up and out your mouth.
So you've just got little bitty poops.
Yeah, you're just breathing little poops all over you. Each other. So maybe you are gargling with, you know, that
there you go.
Method like you talked about. So that's a big percentage of the problems when you're looking at bad breath, and a lot of people don't know this. A lot of people just assume that it's something in my mouth since my mouth stinks. Since stink is coming out of my mouth and somebody told me that, because a lot of times the person has no idea. They smell that all the time. They're just used to it. They think that that's what the world smells like, I guess. But so that's a big cause for a lot of people. Let's go back into the mouth a little bit too, because bacteria also lives in our mouth, and there's situations where they can grow much more, whether there's like tartar or plaque on our teeth. But a big problem that can create this is if someone had, like a root canal, some kind of tooth yanked out or something like that, pockets can be formed in where the tooth was, and it creates like this little hole. And you might not be able to see it very well, or it might just be like a little tiny hole that kind of goes into a bigger hole cavity in there. And bacteria get in there and they set up camp, and it's like a big party. So if there's a party in your mouth
that you're not invited to,
and you're not even invited, which is rude, the waste from that bacteria is going to create odors.
I woke up when you said party.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Another thing with in the mouth, bacterial problems and other degenerative problems of the actual anatomy of like the teeth and gums can happen when your own saliva pH is off. And you have enzymes and different bicarbonates that your saliva naturally secretes. And we've talked about this a lot of times when we have impaired bile flow or maybe impaired liver function. So you're on some medication that's really overwhelming your liver. We can see a severe drop in saliva pH. And then with that, there will oftentimes, if that's sustained, you'll oftentimes see degeneration of the tissues of the mouth and other bacterial problems that start to occur when the saliva pH is really low, because you're missing those sterilizing bicarbonates and other enzymes that your saliva should be naturally secreting all the time.
What about, like people would say, Atkins diet or ketogenic? Is that just because you can't process the meat that you're eating, so that's why it smells?
No,
or
ketones actually can, if you're breathing out ketones on a ketogenic diet, which usually tends to be a big factor when someone first starts out, before the body starts using a lot of those ketones for fuel. But if you breathe those out, that's an odor that is made by those ketones. But with the bacteria in the mouth, there is a test that a coach can do for you. that was learned from Carrie Reams. Do you want to explain how that works a little bit?
Oh, with the nitrate and ammonia test solutions? Right. So, yeah, you wouldn't want to do this on your own if you don't have proper training because these chemicals are really caustic.
Right, and you could hurt yourself. But we do teach how to do this in our coach course, actually.
Yeah, so there's an agricultural expert named Carrie Reams who pioneered a lot of agricultural practices that are still studied in master's and PhD programs in that realm, but he also turned his eye toward human health and innovated a couple analysis techniques that we often use in helping people figure out their own chemistry. And one of those is to analyze the amount of nitrate nitrogen and ammonia nitrogen in urine and saliva using these different test solutions and extract solutions. So we can see the levels of those different things in those different fluids. And when we see a large amount of nitrate nitrogen in the saliva, that's a pretty strong indicator that there's a bacterial overgrowth in the mouth, in the saliva.
Right. Yeah, and we kind of look at this to kind of get some insights into what's going on with protein in the body, and we're kind of getting different insights from this. The mouth one is just a bonus that if you're testing saliva, when you put these drops in, it changes the color of the drops according to the whatever you're testing. And so when if there happens to be bacteria in the mouth, someone's having dental issues where, because most dentists, they'll just yank out a tooth and say, all right, good job, see you later. But some biological dentists will understand that things kind of need to be sealed up and you can't leave holes for stuff to grow in. A lot of people will have the issue, and when you do this test, the color will just go super dark blue, like almost instantly, and you know, okay, that's basically bacteria poop that is making it change the color like that. So that can be an indication that, okay, I need to have a biological dentist look and see if we can figure out some issues that are going on in my mouth, some type of gum disease or an empty pocket where bacteria is living. Something is going on. So that's one way that a person can investigate if they're dealing with an issue of bacteria in the mouth. You know, another thing that I read about when I was looking at stuff for this is that there's been some studies that showed using probiotics. In other words, we know in the body that if we do some kind of antibiotic and wipe out all the good bacteria, that it allows bad bacteria to kind of take over. The good bacteria usually can help hold them in check a little bit. It seemed like that could happen in the mouth as well. So by either supplementing probiotics or by eating fermented foods and allowing that bacteria to actually exist in the mouth while you're eating it, that it was able to help some bad breath issues that were caused by bacteria that I just found interesting. So a person could do, you know, like if they just ate kimchi or sauerkraut occasionally, or if you were a person that had bad breath and you thought that it might be due to bacterial issues in the mouth, that might be something that you could try to see how that goes.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever use that spit test as well to see like the speed at which the spit drips?
I totally forgot about that test. Wow, that is. Explain how that works. I have not used that in probably over a year.
I haven't used it a ton, but for this issue, I think it's helpful. And correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm not as familiar with it as I should be, but it's been explained to me to have someone spit in a cup and then you like tilt it over and you see how fast this, or just watch the spit run down the wall of the cup and see how fast it runs or not.
Basically, you get a clear glass so that you can see through it, and then you fill it with water, and then the person just spits into the glass so that the spit just kind of lands on the top. You're not spitting forcefully to push it down. And I hope I don't get this wrong right now. It's been so long, I can't even remember. But I believe that if it seeps down into the glass relatively quickly, that can be a sign of some type of bacterial issue or some kind of pathogen eating up the body a little bit. And if it floats on the glass a little longer and takes, 10, 15, 20 seconds for it to start seeping down, that's a more healthy situation.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, and that's just, I've just heard about that test from a lot of people. I've never even dug into, is this just fake or false or whatever. I've never really dug into it, but I remember using it with people and having the results correlate with what I saw in other things.
Mm-hmm. One other thing on breath and ketones, sometimes I would see when people are doing a ketogenic diet, including myself, I would see higher amounts of ammonia in my saliva. And I think that would be like one of the ways you can try to distinguish, is it from like my own ketone production, like if my breath felt off, or if it was a lot of nitrogen, like, oh, that's maybe more of a bacterial problem. So that's another tool if you have those chemical reagents that you can use to try to discern that. And there's also a fancy ketone breath monitor that it's called Ketonix. It's kind of a new invention this past year, where you can exhale out into it and can measure the amount of ketones in your saliva. If you're trying to go on a ketogenic diet for whatever reason, you can see how far along you are with that.
But if you are on a low carbohydrate diet, maybe you're not trying to do a ketogenic diet, and your partner is like, hey, your breath is horrible.
Right.
You could use that breath to see, okay, am I breathing out a lot of ketones, or is it something else that I need to look at?
So you could justify that. Like, hey, I have bad breath, but I'm getting nice abs.
Right,
so
right. So
deal with it.
Yeah, pick which one you want. Right. Here's some gum I can chew. You know, also when we talk about bacteria in the mouth or in the gut or whatever, there's different types of bacteria that can create different types of gases too. So that could play a part in what's going on, whether you're seeing ammonia or other types of gases. So that's the breath story, pretty much. What do you think about that story, Kenna?
I was asleep most of the time.
Okay.
But,
you know, one other thing that would really wake Kenna up is that...
is there some naked man somewhere?
No. Oh. No. But I've heard that when there's magnified tartar or, you know, those type of issues in the mouth, that can sometimes be a sign of an iodine deficiency. Maybe someone's drinking water with chlorine or fluoride in it, and it's depleting the body of iodine. But
I also heard that like the amount of tartar on your teeth or whatever is also like it measures within your heart, like the vessels in your heart. They say that amount of
it does
plaque,
build up on your teeth.
Yeah,
it does build up. And I've heard people talk about correlations between plaque buildup on the teeth and a catabolic imbalance, which. Mm. People would often in a catabolic imbalance would end up with more, you know, arterial buildup stuff. It seems to be in most cases. So I don't know if there's a correlation between that or not, but it's worth mentioning just for fun.
Yeah, I don't know if there. I mean, I would think a large factor in is to just the level of the individual's dental hygiene. You know, like, because you could have the same diet and your heart be kind of the same, and you just stop brushing, and you get like a bunch of tartar. But there's, you know, I don't recommend that.
But, yeah, stop brushing, yeah.
But there's different things you can do. In addition to brushing and flossing and all that, there's also, you can do salt water rinses, and then, have you ever heard of...
Water picks.
Water picks, those mechanical toothbrushes are really effective also. And then, have you ever heard of oil pulling?
I have.
Is that with the coconut oil?
Not in your mouth. How do they do it in their mouth?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's kind of an Indian practice. You can go to, like, fancy health food stores and... or groceries and get like special oils for it, but really
I'm feeling pain in my tongue right now as you can even mention it.
You can just use coconut oil, works just fine, but you swish with it for like 10 minutes, which is kind of nauseating if you haven't done it before. But it's because there's certain things that like soaps and salts bind to really well, so you clear off your teeth of those particles through chelation of salts and such when you brush your teeth. But then there's other things that bind well with lipids. So when you swish with fats, you get those things that can also add to tartar or plaque buildup. So you can get your teeth on like another level of clean and being able to clear off certain particles that wouldn't ordinarily bind.
Right. And I, you know, coconut oil is a strong antimicrobial. It's very effective. And I remember hearing this guy in the grocery store when he was buying his coconut oil, telling the cashier guy that he just chews on coconut oil sometimes because it can help clean out a lot of the stuff in your mouth.
Yeah.
And that could be an effective way to do that. They also had probiotic mouthwashes when I was reading about that trial that we had talked about earlier. I wonder if that could be effective too. But, you know, bacteria can be on the tongue. It can exist there. There's a lot of little crevices in there, and you can't see bacteria. It's not necessarily, is the tongue coated or not? But those tongue scraper things are kind of cool. And I, you know, a lot of people really talk about how they really see improvements on a lot of issues when they just use those from time to time.
Yep.
All the cool kids do them.
Tongue scrapers are cool.
Yeah, so let's maybe go into some chronic coughing stuff. Did we have anything else about bad breath?
I would just say, like, if you do have sort of chronic bad breath and you're already doing all the oral hygiene stuff we just talked about, then you should take a look at your stomach acid levels and go through our free digestive issues course at kickintothenuts.com/courses.
That'll help you figure out, is my acid okay or do I need better
stuff
going on? Okay, let's cough it up.
All right, Ross, why do I sometimes get intense coughing fits when I'm not sick and I haven't choked on anything?
Okay, so when we get into chronic cough stuff, there are quite a few issues that can create a chronic cough, but a lot of them are a little more obvious. You know, we know if you get an infection or a cold or a bronchial infection or something like that, that it's going to create coughs, and we all know that. But there's a lot of people out there that have chronic coughs for a very long period of time, and doctors can't figure out what's going on, and they don't see an infection, and the person just has these almost conniption fits where they cough like they sound like they're going to hurl up a lung or something. So what we see in a lot of these situations is that it's an acid reflux problem that is just presenting itself differently in different people. A lot of people will feel heartburn, but other people will have vocal issues, and other people will have coughing issues. And basically what's happening is, as the acid or even if they're using a PPI, because I've had clients come to me with chronic coughs, even a friend of Kenna's, that the doctor said, oh, it's a reflux thing, and they put her on PPIs, but she still had the chronic cough. Like, it didn't improve at all. And so we know that if someone's having reflux and they turn off their stomach acid, they don't feel the reflux anymore. But digestive enzymes in the stomach can still come up with that reflux, and those enzymes are made to break down protein. So they can damage esophagus, vocal cords, all those things. So as that stuff comes up and starts to damage the body knows that it doesn't want it there. So coughing is the way to remove it off of those delicate tissues. So the person ends up coughing ridiculously, and they don't understand why. They're looking at lung problems, all this stuff. But when you fix the acid reflux by increasing stomach acid and triggering that valve to close, it fixes. Do you want to just kind of briefly go over how that works with the LES?
Yeah, I was just thinking it's kind of like being constantly internally waterboarded.
Right.
You know, where the lower esophageal sphincter, the LES, is the top sort of valve on the stomach that should be triggered to seal shut by acid. The pH is like a signal for that valve to like constrict. And
right, so food comes in, the stomach makes acid to break that food down.
Mm-hmm. And then it flexes and seals shut. But if the acid levels aren't strong enough, it doesn't get that trigger, and they definitely wouldn't be strong enough if you took a PPI, because now there's no acid at all in the stomach, then the contents will regurgitate and come up and cause degeneration of that tissue by the enzymes and the acid in that liquid. But it would also potentially obstruct the airway, because there's fluid, you know. So you would oftentimes just try snorting water, like that makes you cough,
right?
Because your body wants to clear water.
It's a reaction for the body to, okay, I gotta handle this.
Right, so you have like a small amount of fluid constantly kind of being regurgitated up through potentially the airway, depending on how far it's going, and so someone would constantly kind of choking essentially and coughing as a result of it. So the answer wouldn't be to just neutralize the stomach acid, because now you're still gonna have all that fluid regurgitating, causing the cough. So you want to actually fix the acidic levels by getting the stomach to have sufficient acid levels to trigger the valve of the stomach, the LES, to close shut and tight, so you don't have that fluid regurgitating.
Someone once mentioned that acid reflux was like internal waterboarding.
Yeah, that was me.
No, I'm kidding. It was a throwback.
Earlier, a minute ago.
Yeah. Let's cover Michelle's question, because she kind of asked about this too.
Okay, Michelle from Imbler, Oregon. What about excessive mucus clearing of the throat? My dad and brother now both have this. We have worked a lot on correcting my dad's digestion, and when his reflux got better, it helped some. But still, he also chokes and gags occasionally on supplements and food. It seems to come and go, but worse when his excessive clearing of his throat is going on.
Yeah, so...
Is that like hiatal hernia sometimes? Because my grandmother would have to get up and like walk around to swallow pills and stuff.
No, it's different, but I'm going to come back to that because that's kind of interesting. So when acid is coming up and it's damaging those tissues, the body's first reaction is to coat the tissues with mucus. And that's kind of what why the body would make mucus. You see mucus in a lot of places where there's inflammation, intestinal damage that's going on with a lot of different types of Crohn's and colitis, that kind of stuff. They'll see a lot of mucus in their stool because the body is making mucus to kind of protect the tissues from that acid. The acid's not supposed to be there. Of course, we know that you're supposed to have that acid neutralized by bile, and we talk about that in our IBS Crohn's colitis
nearly
episode.
Nearly every episode.
Yeah, nearly every episode, like Kenna mentioned. But so that's why these people that are having the chronic cough, they'll see a lot of mucus a lot of times because the body's trying to protect it. So it sounds like Michelle's dad has taken steps to improve his reflux, but one of a couple things that it's either maybe he's not doing quite enough, maybe he still has quite a bit of bacteria in the stomach, so maybe if he's using HCL, it's creating enough acid so that he can digest the food properly for that meal and even trigger the LES to close. But if bacteria gets stronger at any time for some reason, the stomach would be more alkaline from their waste. And so maybe he's right on that fence of going either way. Or he could have a hiatal hernia like Kenna's grandma that's restricting the valve from closing correctly.
He also could still be in a parasympathetic imbalance. You know, where you're going to be more prone to have a stronger gag reflex. So we know digestion is an issue for Michelle's dad because he has reflux.
And it improves when he improves digestion.
Yeah, so that's good. But his nervous system may still be in a parasympathetic state if his body is still trying to really focus on digestion and regeneration. The nerves and hormones associated with the parasympathetic state are going to be more heavily secreted, and that nervous to try to help with digestion and regeneration. And that nervous system pattern is one where we have a heightened gag reflex. So he may still be like extra sensitive, like hard to swallow pills and things like that because of this present orientation of his nervous system.
Right, and we're going to talk about that in 1 second too. But even beyond being overly parasympathetic, if that tissue is sensitive from the damage from the acid, then it could create a reaction that was even stronger, and then you put a parasympathetic imbalance on top of that, and somebody could do a whole bunch of gagging and choking and spitting capsules back up and all kinds of stuff like that.
But you were saying if they're right on the fence, then they would just need to like up their HCL. Maybe he's not taking enough of that.
Or he might need to take steps to wipe out a good layer of that bacteria in the stomach. Because, you know, if someone's HCL production is poor enough that they're having reflux, then odds are good that some bacteria has made it in there and survived, and they climb into the mucus lining. And so when acid comes out during a meal, they just hide and then they can come back out and party a little bit. So her dad may need to take steps to kind of wipe out some bacteria. Do you want to mention a couple steps that we see do well sometimes?
Yeah, we often will recommend D-limonene as a... Jarrow's makes that?
Jarrow, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and then there was another product we recommended before, which is good, just
same
a
thing,
more expensive, called Heartburn Free. Right. And we would also even sometimes recommend Pepto-Bismol.
Right, for short-term use.
Yeah, just as a means to destroy the bacteria that may have embedded itself in the stomach. It works in a way that's different than acid. It kind of strips it of its protective mucus lining, and that enables the acid to then get at the bacteria and wipe it out. That's the theory, anyway, of how it works.
Right, and the delimonene stuff also can seep into that mucus layer and wipe out bacteria. But the thought is that if you take some steps to wipe out the bacteria and then you're using HCL normally, and maybe eventually your body can even start making more of its HCL, then you can keep bacteria from coming in and kind of setting up camp.
Yeah.
So that might be something that Michelle's dad could try. But as Will brought up the parasympathetic thing, let's look at some other just common causes of cough. And one of those is allergies and asthma-type issues. And we see those thrive in a parasympathetic imbalance. Go Will Schmidt.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this one is kind of like, well, which one is first? It's kind of like we see the parasympathetic system overactive when digestion needs support. And we also see problems occur when digestion is not occurring correctly. So foods aren't processed as effectively. Proteins, for example, don't get broken down as well. And when we look at mucus and the lymphatic system, the one of the main things that congests the lymphatic system is proteins. So when proteins aren't being broken down into usable amino acids and peptides, they can create problems like in the bloodstream, get cleared out into the lymph, congest the lymph. So we can see that like create issues with your skin as well as all the places where your lymph flows, which includes like your mucus glands,
right,
as well as like areas where you have BO occur as well. So we would say like, all right, well, is the parasympathetic state occurring or causing these allergies, or is it just like the body's like response to poor digestion create and that's not able to handle these foods well that end up occurring to the body as toxins? So we see foods occurring to the body as like allergens and creating other things like mucus and other allergic reactions like coughing and sneezing and even asthma type things, skin issues, rashes, itchiness. That can correspond with the parasympathetic state. And whether or not the parasympathetic state causes that or not, we do see the person in the parasympathetic state has more of those sort of symptoms. And when they take steps to push themselves into a sympathetic state, like a fight or flight mode, like through some medication, we'll see a decrease in those kind of symptoms occurring.
Right, the reaction doesn't seem to be as severe.
Yeah.
So if your chronic cough is being caused by some type of allergen, there's a simple test that you can look at yourself, and we teach how to do those in the free 4-week digestion course. And if you seem to be in an overly parasympathetic state, then you can just take steps to move yourself the other direction, and then your reaction may not be so severe, and that coughing may be relieved a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Another issue is that, you know, air pollutants can be a problem for some people, especially if the body is already burdened, if it's very toxic for... Maybe they're on a lot of medications. Maybe bile's not flowing, so toxins can't be removed. There's a lot of reasons. If a body is toxic, then a pollutant in the air that may not bother some people could really affect this person.
Mm-hmm.
Or situations like mold in the house and those spores that are released into the air can, you know, your body, as that comes in, the body's like, no, I don't want that in here. And it tries to cough to remove it from the body. So that's worth checking out for some people. Is either is your body toxic and it's just reactive to every simple little thing, or is there something in your house or where you work or something that is some type of environmental problem to you and is causing you to cough a lot?
Yeah. I recently had a client who had a young daughter around 3 or 4 years old who just kept getting all these sinus problems and infections and allergies and was on a lot of different medications, like tons of different medications and multiple rounds of antibiotics, and tried to do a bunch of different things with her diet too. And then I recommended, like, what about like the air in your house? Like, could there be some sort of like mold or allergen? And I had her start using thieves oil. You ever heard of thieves oil?
I have heard of that. We talked about that on our show once.
It's a steal.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
It's, that was the same joke that Kenna used when we talked about it too.
Still,
so
I learned from you, Tony. Those jokes.
Yeah, but that is a pretty powerful. It's an insanely powerful antibiotic, natural agent. It's made of the essential oils of like clove and lemon and orange and things like that that you could put in a diffuser that just can wipe out microbes in your house. And
you
also,
mean like a humidifier kind of thing? It's just blowing it into the air.
Well, diffuser is kind of like. It's not, I guess it's like a humidifier, but it's more like,
ionizer kind of thing.
You know, if you had like Purell has things you can plug into the wall and it'll just kind of like spritz like a little into the atmosphere, just constantly like kind of low grade diffusion of the liquid into a gas. They have those. You can also put them in like little candle burners where they have a little ceramic dish for the oil and you put a candle beneath it. So it heats it and that. It fumigates your house, essentially, with these essential oils. But since she started doing that, the kid hasn't had any sinus problems. And like,
so interesting.
The sickness, like, all of them kept getting sick over and over. Now they're good. There's that, and then I've also known and have myself used a, not a vaporizer, it's...
Oh, I know what you're going to say.
You know,
nebulizer.
A nebulizer with colloidal silver.
Right.
Which is highly antimicrobial. And also other arguably like youthing effects from it. That's very good for your immune system. So I've done that with people that have had sinus infections, and it can really help wipe all of them out. And
neti pots too.
Neti pots can do that too. Yep. With salt waters. So yeah, those things that might be necessary to, if you have some sort of bacterial or fungal or some kind of mucus reaction because of a microbe, breathing in sterilizing agents like natural products like thieves oil or nebulizing with colloidal silver could be useful. And it could be useful to put up a diffuser with thieves oil in your house to just clear off any like mold right. or something that might be there.
Cool. Yeah, I like that. So I think we have time. Let's do an Ask Tony question since it was a similar topic.
All right. Katie from Canada. Hi, I really enjoyed your book, and I believe if I eat more real foods and less processed foods, as well as fewer carbs, I would probably feel better and lose weight. I need to lose about 60 pounds, and I know what I weighed when I started to get heartburn all the time. I got it every day, so now I'm on a PPI once a day to prevent heartburn and heal any damage from heartburn. I believe I will get rid of the heartburn once I reach that weight. I find I do get heartburn as soon as I miss one or especially two pills in a row. If I miss a pill and have any caffeine, I most certainly will get heartburn. So I am hesitant to stop this and try these HCL and Beet Flow. Can I not just go the real food route and my body will just have to put up with the medicine until I reach my goal? Thanks, Tony. So she's saying what she thinks she gets to her goal weight, the acid reflux will be gone.
Right. So, and this is a common misconception because someone will look at a problem that started when their weight reached a specific
amount. And they think it's the weight.
Right. So they view it as the weight. And as soon as I lose that weight, I'll move backwards and move back to where I didn't have that problem.
When I got to my heaviest, I met you. What is that about? Whoa. So, and that's where all my problems started.
Uh-huh. So the problem with this is, okay, there is a situation where added weight could create reflux because if it's like pressing up against the diaphragm or creating like a hiatal hernia and stretching the esophagus and kind of pulling that stomach into the diaphragm a little bit, then that would create acid reflux. Beyond that, it doesn't, you know. So in most cases, there is some type of underlying issue that is creating both problems, but people view it as I gained weight and I have this problem because they can visually see the weight. So they just assume, well, that's the problem. But we know that a lot of the causes of weight have to do with an inability to digest food correctly, so they're not getting the nutrients they need. They get cravings. The body becomes toxic if food's not digested. You want to mention some of those kind of things? So there's a lot of things that could cause weight gain and reflux at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, and this logic to me just sounds like someone who will join a gym once they lose the weight.
Right, right. Yeah, you don't want to have that kind of thinking.
Yeah, I mean, this seems really backwards. Like, but if you, Katie, if you like figure out a way to get your body to lose weight without fixing this problem, by the time you get down to the weight, you probably will have done something that inadvertently fixed this problem, because this is the problem that's making you fat, most likely. It's probably one of the biggest contributing factors to why you're overweight is because you don't have good digestion working. So to try to say, well, I'm just going to like keep my digestion turned off until I lose the weight is totally illogical.
Right. And what will end up happening is
gain more weight.
Yeah.
Well, maybe in the long run, but let's say that a person was like, had some way that, okay, I'm just not going to
cocaine.
Eat, I'm not going to yeah. eat right. Yeah, let's say they use cocaine.
Yeah. Diet pills.
But what I'm going to say is that if they did something that was going to create weight loss without fixing digestion, it's also going to create insanity because of the lack of nutrients that are going to be available. The brain is not going to be able to function correctly, and there's probably going to be some type of emotional issue or insanity that could magnify from that. So, but we're about to have a solution for you, Katie, so be excited.
Yeah. So what you want to do is like try to fix this problem. Take our free digestion course at kickinthenuts.com and figure out how to restore the acid levels to your stomach so you can start to actually digest your food and get rid of your heartburn. And then you'll be able to lose weight in a healthy way where your body is being nourished and just doesn't need to store fat anymore. As opposed to if you go this other route of like, not that you're saying you're going to do amphetamines and starve yourself, but that's the only other way you're really going to lose weight without fixing digestion is through starvation, which is a very unhealthy and unsustainable way to try to lose weight.
So here's one thing, and this is, okay, this is kind of tricky to talk about. Because keep in mind that we're not saying to
get
stop.
Off your meds.
Yeah, we're not saying don't take your PPI. That's not what we're saying at all. But what?
Oh, I was going to have a question. Can somebody be on those meds, though, and do the HCL and the beet flow?
Yeah, that's where I'm going. Oh. So hello. You were way ahead of me. Because people feel like, oh, I can't do both. And I will say that doing both is a little bit pointless for the most part, but it can still be done and can be effective. What you can't do is you can't supplement with HCL to improve stomach acid and take an antacid at the same time. Like, you know, one of those chalky kind of things that, something that turns off stomach acid. It neutralizes stomach acid. If you do that while you're supplementing with HCL, then you're silly. Yeah, it wouldn't be fun. But a PPI just turns off your body's ability to make its own stomach acid. So you could continue to take that while you're supplementing with HCL, but here's what's going to happen. You know, we teach people how to start with a very low dose and kind of work up, because you have to figure out how much you need. You know, the fact that you get heartburn if you just skip a couple days of the pill is a pretty good sign, because it shows that your body has the ability to start making acid again pretty quickly. And for a lot of people, they don't when they've been on those meds for a while. But what happens is when you start to add just a little bit of HCL, a lot of times the heartburn gets worse, because now you're still getting the reflux that you were getting before. You just didn't feel it because there was no acid. But now you added acid to your stomach. So now when that reflux is coming back up, you're going to feel it even more. It's going to be more painful. But what most people don't understand is that once they acidify that stomach enough, it triggers the LES to close. There's no more reflux, and they fixed it.
Yeah, and since reflux is such a big worry for you, Katie, like, you might want to just go ahead and take the extra steps that we recommend for problematic cases, like taking the D-limonene or heparin free, avoiding carbohydrates with the meals where you take hydrochloric acid and protein. And there's even other things you can do, like avoiding certain fibers that are problematic. And there's other tools like activated charcoal away from meals, raw carrot fibers. Aloe vera can also sometimes be helpful, but you want to
away from food.
Yeah. But you want to try to make it as harmonious an environment for acid to be added to your stomach. So you want to kill the bacteria that's there. Try using the D-limonene product. Don't food combine, because the carbohydrates can create an elevated alkaline internal environment. So if you have carbohydrates with proteins, with HCL, it can create more of a fizzy mess.
It can kind of activate the bacteria that's in there. And the people that usually have a lot of problem, like I just described, where they'll add their, you know, the first time they try it, they'll add, you know, one HCL, or maybe they'll get to two, and then the reflux will be more. Usually the people that experience that the most are the people that their stomach is packed with bacteria because there's no acid there to wipe them out. And just about anybody that is on a PPI is going to have bacteria in their stomach unless they're eating some type of sanitized something. Because just the food that we eat, it has stuff on it.
Yeah.
And so by taking the steps to wipe out some bacteria first before you start it, a lot of people are able to bypass that, the symptom of the heartburn that they experience as they ramp up to the full dose.
Mm-hmm.
And the only time it really doesn't work is if somebody has a hiatal hernia that's restricting that valve from closing properly.
Yeah, and this may not be totally smooth sailing when you try to fix this, Katie, like, but just know it's really critical that you do fix this, not just to lose weight, but for long-term health reasons. If your digestion is off, you're going to run into some nutrient deficiencies, and a lot of endotoxin filth is going to just be continually flooded into your system that would create much more serious health problems and energy production problems in the future. So you may have some increased discomfort while you try to navigate this and change the chemistry of your stomach and kill off the bacteria. But if you can tolerate it and work through it, it usually only takes a couple weeks for most people to fix this issue. But if you can get through that, it'll make a huge world of difference.
Yeah, and don't view this like we're saying you did something wrong. That's not what we're saying. You were doing what makes sense to someone viewing this from the outside, really. But try looking at it this way, that, you know, a big problem with major weight gain, somebody that would gain, you know, 40 or 50 pounds, and remember, you know, that happening, it's most commonly, there's a lot of issues that can create it, but most commonly, poor nutrient assimilation is involved in there in some way, and that's kind of what's making the body either eat too many carbohydrates, processed foods, and junk, because that stuff is easier to digest, or they're eating too much. And that's usually because they're not pulling enough of the nutrients out of the food they're eating, and the body's like, I gotta have stuff here, so the person keeps eating. So think about that, if that process started to happen around the same time that your reflux happens, it makes sense that the actual underlying cause may have been the disruption in your digestion and that kind of falling apart, and that created the weight gain and the heartburn, instead of viewing it as, oh, I just gained weight because it's a genetic thing, or I'm getting older, and then the weight gain is making the reflux happen. So if you view it the way that's more scientific, it'll help you move through the steps with a better understanding. I think we've finished talking about stuff.
Cool.
Yeah, if you like audiobooks, you're going to love our sponsor. Audible.com has given all our listeners a free audiobook of your choice and a free 30-day membership. Go to kickitinthenuts.com/audiobook to find the link so you can get yours. So you could probably get Kick Your Fat in the Nuts.
If you can get it for free.
Listen to it.
There's an audiobook version.
Exactly.
And if you go check out the Coach Course at Coach Course,
HealthProCourse.com.
I don't even know what they are. If registration is not currently open, sign up to be notified. We're only going to open up registration for about a week at a time every once in a while so that we can manage everything that's going on. So just be sign up to be notified or you'll miss it, and then you'll be sad, and you won't like us.
If you want to learn more about how to look at your own chemistry, you can read any of Tony's books or take the free 4-week digestion course at kickitinthenuts.com. Also, go to healthprocourse.com to learn more about how to become a health coach, and head on over to Will Schmidt's page, mybodyofknowledge.net, to check out all his information, blogs, and exercises and good stuff like that.
Yeah, like that. Mm. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. 'Cause I know a place where the sun is on.